We are continuing our 1955 Kailua study series, chapter 19, the Psalms, our personal relationship to God. Now, the first principle I found was on the first page. Truth is found within ourself, and the way to achieve it is through individual experience. And that individual experience is very, very important. We each have to have our own conscious contact with God. We have to have our own experience, and it may be entirely different from someone else's. But let's move into this chapter where Joel is giving us our freedom to follow our own path. He talks, of course, about different concepts of God, the orthodox sense of God and the metaphysical sense of God. And he says one of the errors was that it presented God as a servant. If God was a principle, we could use it. Truth is God, but we use truth. And he talks about today is the only day, and today I want that car. Now, way back in 1975, I was entering this truth study, and I went to a Unity church, and I met some people there, and they were telling me how you could demonstrate a car. You could use these principles. And I got excited about it, and I practiced a little metaphysical manipulation, and sure enough, I demonstrated a car. It was a good car. I liked it. It worked well. It was brand new. However, that was just the rudimentary, bare beginnings at what I understand now is a death of self and an awakening into the realization of true identity, or God expressed. So he's just covering some of this, because perhaps some of these people in the audience were also from those early days, moving from metaphysics into the infinite way. And perhaps some of you have done the same. So he says, our freedom lies in being led back to the center of our being, where we can find God for ourselves, since God is an individual experience. And really, that's the gist of this chapter. He's going to give you the freedom, and everyone listening, to walk away from the infinite way if it's not leading you to your own individual experience. And he says repeatedly, you have to have an individual experience. And it's true. Jesus Christ had the ultimate. With eyes open, he could walk around fully aware, fully conscious, that I and the Father are one. Conscious union with eyes open. Everywhere. But that was his experience, and the things that he says may do nothing for you at all. That's why I often tell people if they disagree, that's perfectly fine. Because each needs to have their own conscious, individual experience of God. It has to be my God, my experience. That's what awakens me, not your experience, not Jesus' experience, not Buddha's experience. I have to have my own. So, some people call, when they make the contact, they call it the presence or the still small voice, the Father, the Christ, invisible flesh, invisible spiritual substance, is, or God, or friend. And so when he talks down here about David's experience and Elijah's and Jesus and his, he's telling you you have to have your own experience. And the experience will, well, for me it's always been a presence or a father or the I of me. But for you it may be that you actually hear a still small voice. It may be that it's a friend. Each of us has to have our own experience. And he says, in the infinite way, we have no rules, but rather an instruction that we be still, that we be silent, that we learn to go within, ultimately without the benefit of either thought or words, just with that listening ear, and there commune with God. Whether you call it the Father within, or you call it God, or Divine Mind, whatever name you give it, would be a concept of God that you are entertaining at the moment. And it would be a right one. It would be a right one for you at that time. Yes, because in the early days, I just called it God, or principle, or truth. And after all these years on the path, I tend to feel it as a presence, as a higher self, as the self behind all that is. So that too is a concept. It's not the ultimate experience, because that's still a set of words. So you have to give yourself some freedom, some latitude, some room to move around and grow. And if your concept is Father, that's perfectly fine. That's how it feels to you. Don't try to mold yourself to Joel's infinite invisible, because if you try to mold yourself to his concept, it won't work. There won't be any fruitage. It'll just be borrowing a concept, rather than having your own individual experience. And he says, a year from now you may laugh at yourself for entertaining the concept you have today. If you are turning with an attentive ear within your own being, you are being instructed. So your instruction will come by inner unfoldment, and it will be progressive. And that instruction is for real, folks. If you have practiced the 12 times a day, or as many times as you can, and you've begun to make contact, you are making contact with the Spirit of Truth, with which Christ Jesus said will teach you all things. Now, when I was reading this chapter and making notes for this talk, I wrote, just now I received in meditation, because I meditate before I make these talks, nothing has a beginning or an end. Only God is, and God has no beginning or end. Therefore, nothing and no one has a beginning or end. Now, if you go into that, many of us have been listening to the Herb Fitch talks on Beyond Time. Take a look at that, what was revealed by the, well, what instruction came to me today by listening within. Nothing has a beginning or an end. Now, if you look around with your eyes open, that means no people have a beginning or end. No animals have a beginning or end. No plants have a beginning or end. No planets have a beginning or end. No galaxy has a beginning or end. No illness has a beginning or end. No lack has a beginning or end. No loneliness has a beginning or end. Nothing has a beginning or an end, because God is. God is all, and God has no beginning or end. So anything your senses report to you as having a beginning or an end has no existence. And that takes pretty much everything out of existence, doesn't it? Anyway, it's something to contemplate and look at and get the feel of. So this is what he means by we are instructed from within and it will be progressive. After we have gotten away from orthodox concepts, we pass through the metaphysical stage. And after that, there's a third stage. That's when we realize in both cases we have been entertaining intellectual concepts, but we have not been experiencing God. We have been knowing God after the fashion of someone who has been telling us what they believe about God instead of our own individual experience. I see that a lot in people that just quote Infinite Way and quote Joe Goldsmith all the time. I do sometimes, but when I quote, it's because I just had instruction or an experience or an awareness of the principle I'm quoting. It's not because I'm just quoting out of memory. And I don't do it very often. And when people quote all the time, it tells me they don't have the consciousness of it, only the quotes. So that's what he means. We've been knowing God after the fashion of someone who's been telling us what they believe. When we reach a stage where we don't care what Joel said anymore, we must have our own experience, even if it disagrees with Joel. Then we're at this third stage. And we must reach that third stage, the stage where we can say, you know, I don't care what Joel's experience. In fact, I've been reading some of his books sometimes, and I come across something and I say, that's wrong. He got that wrong. And for me, that's right. So, the only teacher you should have is that instruction you receive within. The only one you should have on a pedestal is your Christ self, the invisible spiritual substance. That's the only teacher. Sure, you can borrow from others for inspiration. But in this third stage, it's perfectly fine to say, oh, I don't agree with that. Joel's wrong. And of course, he gives this example how there is no such thing as the only prayer. And I wrote here, do not be afraid to have your own experience of it, even if it is totally different from the Infinite Way. Now, that brings to mind Robert Adams and his book, The Silence of the Heart. He is a man who went to Joel, and Joel said, oh, you don't need to be listening to me. You need to go to Maharishi, or however you pronounce his name, Ramana. And so Robert did. He went over to that guru, and he received enlightenment. He never would have received it through the Infinite Way. He received it through the Advaita Vedanta, through the Advaita Way, through self-inquiry, which is where you say to yourself, to whom does this question come? To whom do these pictures come? Who am I? Or what I is this coming to? And you sit as an observer or a beholder. And with everything that's presented to you, good or bad, who is this presented to? Who is watching these thoughts? And so on. Until you awaken out of all these 10,000 things, as it's explained in the Tao, to that I. So that was Robert's path, and it worked, and his book is absolutely beautiful. Now, Nisargadatta, or however you pronounce it, the man who wrote I Am That, another beautiful book, he had the awareness of himself as omnipresence. He had the awareness, I am that. And you can feel it in his book. But he smoked like a chimney. He chain-smoked and he died from lung cancer. So he did not follow the infinite way path. He did not obviously know too much about spiritual healing principles. But he didn't care. He didn't have to care. Because his experience was one of joy and constant bliss. And when you're in constant bliss, you don't care too much, as he put it, what the karma of the body is. So, you have your freedom to find God in your own individual way, and you should exercise that freedom. If this path is not doing it for you, let it go. Search for a while until you find the one that is, and you may find that you come back to this path. And that's okay. And you may find that you never return here. You find a guru or a teacher that leads you in another path that's right for you. And it's perfectly fine. And that's what he's giving us in this chapter. Two principles. One, you have the freedom to find your own path. And two, you must have your own individual experience of God. It must be an experience, not a concept. So prayer itself is in three stages. First, communicating with God. Second, in a communion with God. And then third, in a union or oneness with God. The words would be meaningless to us if we tried to duplicate them. Yes, if that's what you do, you just learn what Joel has said and you quote him. It's all on the intellectual plane. It's not making that actual contact. And it's not going to work. Now he repeats the nature of error down here is a sense of separation has brought about. And this sense of separation from our good appears externally as sin, as disease, as lack, as limitation. But regardless of what form it appears in, the basic error is always a sense of separation of God, from God. And I wrote, so if you are showing forth any of these, sin, disease, lack, limitation, regardless of what truth you know in your mind, you are still entertaining a sense of separation from God. You have not arrived at ultimate realization. And that's true, and so I think that encompasses all of us. If there's any disease, any sin, any lack, any limitation, we are still entertaining a sense of separation. And we have not demonstrated our oneness. We have not realized our oneness completely. So let's not fool ourselves that we've arrived in some nirvana state. Just because we have a mellow feeling inside, if we're still out picturing or showing forth these problems, we have work to do, at least on this path. If you're not on this path, if you're taking the path of the man who wrote, I am that, well, then don't worry about it. You're on a different path. But if you're in this path and you want to grasp the principles, then we need to be honest and say, okay, I have more work to do because I'm still entertaining error. Now, the overcoming of these evils in human existence lies in attaining the realization of our oneness with God, yes. But realization means consciously feeling that oneness, not knowing it in the mind, but feeling it as an experience, a spiritual experience, an individual, actual experience of God. Now, how do you know if you've had an individual actual experience of God? If you've actually experienced oneness with God, how do you know? Is it because of a warm, fuzzy feeling inside? By their fruits you will know them. Now, I repeat this again and again because we We fool ourselves. I do too. Or our false sense of self fools us, however you want to look at it. I know if I've had an actual spiritual realization of my oneness with God, an actual spiritual experience of union, when the error disappears and harmony shows forth. Because that's the fruitage of a real experience. If you don't have that fruitage, you haven't had a realization at depth. You may have had a light realization, but you haven't had the realization at depth which will transform you within and without. So he says, I know right well that I'm entertaining a sense of separation from God because most of the time I have no feeling of God's presence. And we all have to admit this. It could be that we're feeling that presence 2 out of the 12 times a day. It could be that we're feeling, maybe we're even feeling that presence 12 out of the 12 times a day. But there's half a day that we're not. And as we started this talk, Jesus Christ walked around in conscious oneness with that presence as that presence flowed through constantly. And that's our aim and our goal. So you go about the business of finding how to get back to the Father's house. No one can chart a path for another, not even the Infinite Way, or Joel, or Herb. Now, there's nothing wrong about any of these ways, including the metaphysical, the mental, the Advaita, Zen, even organized religion if you find your presence sitting in the middle of a church. The wrongness is when someone outlines the words, the phraseology, and the manner of prayer. Yeah. If you're going to quote, chances are you don't have it. Unless the consciousness behind that quote is simply using those words, but it's the consciousness coming through. God itself is an experience, but it is an individual experience. You yourself must experience God. Yes, it's only an experience of God that's going to transform you within and without. Only an experience. That's an important word. You must experience God. Your experience. Not mine, not Joel's, not Herb's, not Buddha's, not Jesus. Yours. Do not let yourself be deceived by anyone's experience into believing that you must follow their pattern. And Joel's giving everyone the freedom right there to walk away from the Infinite Way. Now, he takes a different track here, and I like it because I can really relate to it. He says, I have a deep love for God, but I also have some kind of a traveling salesman's sense of humor that gets mixed up with that love. And sometimes I talk to God in a way that some of you might not approve of, because it is not an unusual thing for me to say, see here, God, let's get together on this, or I'm going to quit. You can have back all your heaven and your earth and your hell, and I'm going my own way. Either we get to understand each other better, or it's going to be no dice. Now, the class laughed there, but I can tell you, having lived that experience, it wasn't so funny. Once upon a time, and most of you know this story, I was so angry at God because I was trying and trying and trying to practice these principles so that my now ex-wife could have a healing. And I couldn't succeed. It wasn't working. And the harder I worked, the worse she got. And I just, that's it, I was mad at God. So I decided I was going to be normal. No more of these spiritual experiences. What good are they if I can't even help the person I love? So I went into my room and I took every copy, every book I had, and I tore it up, ripped pages out of it, ripped the binding where I could, threw it in the trash. Every Infinite Way book. And I had that old black original Infinite Way book. I had a lot of originals because this was in the early 80s, I guess. And I took all of my tapes, Herb Fitch tapes, Joel Goldsmith tapes, and I pulled the tape out and snapped it in half, and broke those, and crushed them with my heel, my foot, and threw them in the trash. I was mad. I was mad. I was hurt. So I threw it all away, and I said, "Now, God, I'm going to be normal. You leave me alone. No more meditation. I don't know how much time I have left with this lady who appears to be dying, but I'm going to just enjoy it. I'm going to come home from work and watch TV with her. No more meditation, no prayer, no reading, nothing. I'm going to be a normal human being, just like the rest of humanity." And I meant it. So, I did pretty good. I went about 30 days, and I did nothing of a spiritual nature. I laughed at the sitcoms and enjoyed my wife, and that was the end. No more God for me. Well, I never wake up in the morning. I tend to stay up till 2 or 3 in the morning and sleep till 9. And that's just the pattern. If I don't have any clocks, that'll be the pattern my body moves into. And so I never, if I have a job where I have to wake up and be there at 7, I have to have usually 2 alarms because the first one won't wake me. I had a buzzing alarm and I dreamt I was on a motorcycle. That didn't work, so I had to get a bell alarm with it. And then when they both went off, I was able to wake up. That's how difficult it is for me to wake up in the morning. Well, after about a month of having no God in my life, feeling fairly comfortable, one morning at 4 o'clock in the morning, which is not a time I ever wake up, my eyes popped open, and within myself, I heard one word, meditate. Well, I was half asleep, so asleep that I'd forgotten my decision. And I walked out to the living room, and I sat down on the couch, and I closed my eyes. And I said something simple, like, "Father, lift me up into thy presence, and let thy presence descend in me. Let there be no mortal mind, but only thy presence." And that was it. Well, the presence flowed into my being and my body so powerful that I was humming. I felt it down my arm and down my other arm, down my legs. My whole body was vibrating pure white light. And then it filled the room. The whole room was that light, and I was that light, and that light was me. And then it filled the house. The whole house was that light, and I was that light, and that light was me. One being. And then it started vibrating, and I knew it's going to go infinite, and I'm going to be standing face to face with God. And then I remembered how angry I was. That little ego spoke up and said, "I'm afraid." And no sooner did that thought come that it slowly subsided and I was back to normal. Well, the point of the story is, where Joel says here, "I don't know that God objects to that type of talking very much because it usually ends up with a very warm inner feeling and I get the impression that God is smiling." That's exactly correct. Because in that experience, I had thrown God away and he came looking for me. Now, you have no idea how tender and wonderful that is. I threw him away and he came looking for me. He didn't even pay any attention to my temper tantrum. So yes, in different stages, different states of consciousness, you can talk to God just about any way you please. The point is, when you're done talking, to listen, because that's where the experience happens. And incidentally, after I stopped working on healing my ex-wife, she got better. Eventually we divorced, and as far as I know, she's still moving along on this planet. So, back to this. Joel says, at other times I don't feel that way at all. At other times I have a mellowness inside, and I can't describe it. It's just a feeling that is beyond description, and I can sit with it for a few minutes. And probably John was right when he said God is love. Probably that is the feeling that I have. But there are no words with it. There are no thoughts with it. It's just that. It's a mellowness. It's inexplicable, that's all. And that's the experience I described on the Mystical Principles list today in answer to the question, how do you meditate when you're afraid? Well, when you have this experience, it's impossible to be afraid because that love is flowing back and forth. But this is not something I understand with the mind. This is something that I close my eyes, I make that contact, and it happens. God's not something you understand. God's something that happens. God happens to you. All right, there are other times when I go to God very seriously and talk things out and wait for an answer. I do know that I entertain such a concept of God, and there is no such God. This is Joel talking now. But it seems to require that I sort of talk things out a little bit. And so he's aware of that paradox. And if you walk this path for a number of years, you will be too. There are times when you, well, he'll say it here as we move on. And so it is, I'm sure that the father is busy with his big family and not too much concerned with what I'm saying, but giving me the opportunity to get it off my chest. And then in that way, an answer comes back. You see, the words, the thoughts, none of that's really important. The point is that you reach a point of emptiness where God happens to you. Now, if you can reach that point of emptiness, that point of receptivity, by having these 12 periods of contact a day in which you say, "Speak, Lord, thy servant heareth." Or you can reach that point of emptiness, of stillness, of silence, by asking yourself, to whom is this coming? Who is this thought coming to? Who is watching this mind? To whom is this world presenting itself? You see, these are just tricky little words and thoughts leading us to that point of stillness. And the point is to rest in that silence. How you enter that silence is no big deal. It's whatever appeals to you. But when you enter that silence, God happens as an experience. So find your way to enter the silence, and God happens. If you and I ever attain a confidence in God's grace, he says, we will have no further use for prayer in any form. We will have no further use for any of the words that go to make up prayer, because we'll have an inner awareness in God's grace, and that will be the prayer, the communing, and eventually the union itself. And I wrote in the margin, awareness is the proper or pure prayer, because that awareness is a state of silence. You see, it doesn't matter what path you choose. It doesn't matter what tools you use. It doesn't matter what words or thoughts you have. What matters is that you empty out the 10,000 things, as the Tao calls it, as Lao Tzu calls them, And in the silence, in the moment of nothingness, the everythingness of God happens. It just announces itself in your awareness. And that's the experience. And how you get there, Joel says, doesn't matter. Find your own. Now, David had to live every hour of every day in this world. He had to meet every form of belief that we meet within our experience. Even after he had the assurance of God's grace, he still had to meet Goliath. And I used to wonder to myself, after I've had so many spiritual experiences, how can I still sometimes not feel God's presence? Look, we're either walking in the consciousness of this world, which we determined at the beginning of this talk, if it has a beginning or an end, it has no existence. So we're either walking in the consciousness of that which has no existence, the 10,000 things, the things that are being presented to something, to some I, or we are in a moment's respite from all of that, simply beholding. And then God flows forth as an experience. We experience reality. You can put that in any words you want, too. God happens. You feel the presence. Your friend is there. The Father flows. You see? We use words. The experience is the same, no matter what path you're on. So, Joel says, I've just made a note of the first few of these to show you how many ways there are, even for David, who has the assurance of God's grace, how many ways there are for him to wander away from a pure metaphysical treatment or prayer, how he can become human in his fears and doubts and hesitations and appeals to God, even though always he ends up back in communion with God and eventually in union with God. And that's what we must do. Now, if we've read the biography of Joel S. Goldsmith by... who did that? Sinclair, right? Anyway, if we've read that autobiography, or that biography, then we know, by reading that letter that Joel wrote to God after the Infinite Way was very well established, how he felt like a total and complete failure. And he wrote that letter and said, here, God, here's my failure. I can't do any more. Now, you know he was feeling a sense of separation when he wrote that. So even he, with all those years, all those healings, all those thousands of miles, classes, wonderful spiritual experience, reached a place in his walk where he felt separated from God, hadn't felt the presence in a few days. I can tell you this. When you get used to walking in the conscious awareness of the presence, in the conscious awareness of the I, in the conscious awareness of that I that I am, the is, the Tao, when it's gone and you're just totally stuck in the consciousness of this world again, it's pretty miserable. That's where I was at when I tore everything up. That's where Joel was at when he wrote that letter. But eventually he ends up back in communion with God and eventually in union with God. And Joel says it returns. And when it returns, it's even more warm and even more wonderful. And he's right. The contemplation of God and the laws of God help us to attain that assurance in God's grace. Herb says he found that not very many people are contemplating, and that they should be. And the reason why I wrote that down is because that's one of the ways back. You know, we get to the place where we can shut our eyes, get still, and make that contact almost at will. And then that leaves for a season, for a little while. And we have to go back to contemplation. Because that, again, will lead us back into the inner chamber, to the temple where God is. So, don't throw any of these things away. Make use of whatever one's working today to lead you in there, where you can have your individual experience with God as you experience God. So the first thing you know when you contemplate the law or the love of God throughout the day and night, you find a confidence developing within yourself in the fact that there is a God, that a God operates through law, that God maintains and sustains that law. Ask yourself, is it really true that all I need to do is totally forget about and take no thought at all about my life and just contemplate God? Is it true that if I do that, I will prosper? Every good and perfect spiritual gift will be added? Is it true that if you take no thought about your life at all, none of it, and just contemplate God day and night, that all these things will be added? The Master says it, but is it true? Have you proved it by doing it? That's the question. So you must take that principle of contemplation and let it mold itself into your individual experience. Thereby you are fulfilling the great wisdom of all the Masters. Acknowledge Him in all thy ways. That doesn't mean just repeating quotes. That means actually contemplating. If you don't know how to contemplate, if you've forgotten, go back to the Art of Meditation and read it, the first few chapters. All right, so, acquaint myself with God. Well, shall I use that statement as an affirmation? To know Him aright as life eternal? No. Forget the statement. Forget the statement and see how you can get to know Him aright as an experience. How shall we get to know God aright? How shall we have an experience of God? And there becomes your first battle with yourself, because it is within yourself that you have to decide how you are going to come to know God aright. And you must do this. No teacher can do this for you. Yes, you have to find out yourself. Is the infinite way right for me? Do I want to follow the Advaita Vedanta? Self-inquiry? How about Zen cones? Do I want to follow them? Maybe a path of love is right for me. Do I want to lose myself totally in service to others? How can I find the way to enter the silence? And so find it and walk it. Don't worry about what anybody else is doing. In my own case, he says, in the early days, the way was to say, God, look here, how do I get to know you? I like him. He doesn't put on any pretenses. I'm starting out with the fact that I don't even know if there is a God. Oh, I know that it says so, and I'm supposed to believe it, but just between you and me, how can I believe in a God? I had no hesitancy in starting out that way. I have no hesitancy in talking to God that way, even today, which was 1955. Because that struggle leads one ultimately to find some piece of literature, some teacher, some teaching, some way that can put them on the right track toward finding God. Yes, don't be afraid to wrestle with these things. So what? Maybe the infinite way is wrong. It could be wrong. What about that? Have you ever entertained that? I have. This is the way you wrestle with these things and find out, is this my path? It isn't the answer spending all my time trying to solve problems. I have got to become acquainted with God and discover that because or in and through that relationship, there are no more problems. Now, this is very important. Let's see what I wrote here in the margin first. Again, is it true that forgetting my life and just contemplating God, listening several times a day, will completely straighten out my life? What he's saying here, what the principle is here, is we have to reach a place where we're not trying to solve problems, whether it's supply or companionship or health. We've got to get to the place where we say, okay, maybe, Maybe Jesus Christ is right. If I seek first to acquaint myself with God, the rest will fall into place. But I'm never going to know it unless I do it. In the doing of it is where I'll discover the truth. Now, if I still have these problems out here, stop lying to myself. I've got to stop lying to myself. I don't have it. If I have these problems, I don't have it. So, if I don't have it, what am I doing wrong? I'm trying to solve the problems. Let me stop that. Let me just work on getting acquainted with God. How? What's my path? I don't know. I've got to try the different things and find out. And if you're past that stage and you know that the infinite way is your path, then you're going to say, okay, what I have to do is 12 times a day, honest to goodness, honest to God, have a 3 to 4 minute period where I'm listening until I develop the capacity to be receptive and to start receiving impartations. Then, when I receive those impartations, God happens to me in the silence, everything out here will fall into place. And if I'm receiving those impartations and nothing out here is falling into place, I'm not receiving impartations. I'm receiving mental good feelings. It's crap. Excuse the language. It's just not truth. But if I am receiving impartations and everything's beginning to fall into place, I'm on the right track. Now, this is either true. Christ was either telling the truth when he said, seek ye first the kingdom, God's righteousness, and everything will fall into place or be added or included, or he was lying. Find out. But the only way to find out is to be honest and to practice it. And if you're not practicing it, well, you know, I sort of hit it 3 times a day, kind of, but I get interrupted with phone calls and stuff. Okay, you're not practicing it. But if you are practicing it, then you'll know. You'll know if it's for you, and you'll know if Jesus Christ was telling the truth. So the principle is that if we contemplate, meditate on the law of God day and night, everything we do shall prosper. Now, is that the truth or not? You have to go find out for yourself. So, we do not have to handle lack and limitation. We do not have to handle false appetites, sins, or diseases. We have nothing to do with that. We do have to meditate day and night on and in the laws of God, God's presence, God's love. And then that contemplation or meditation itself results in the disappearance of our problems. Now see, if we're doing it right, it results in the disappearance of our problems. If we still have the problems, we're not doing it right. We need to consult the books. We need to ask questions from a teacher. We need to find out. Stop spinning our wheels and just guessing and going through the motions. So the 91st Psalm says, he that dwelleth in the secret place of the Most High won't have these problems. They'll pass over. The principle of harmony is dwell in the secret place of the Most High, and you will have none of the problems of the world to overcome. Is it true? You individually will have to prove it. Do you see again how prayer is a meditation, a contemplation, a dwelling in the ideas of God? He doesn't tell us we mustn't use Moses' idea or Jesus' idea or Paul's idea. He doesn't say we have to use the Father within or Christ. He just tells us the principle. The principle is dwell in the secret place of the Most High. Dwell in God. Meditate on God. That's all. And in that, we find the solution not only to immediate problems, but we find no reoccurrence of the problems, because they do not come nigh our dwelling place. Now, we're going to have to prove that principle for ourselves. And if it doesn't work and we can't do it, and year after year after year, maybe we need to find another path, and he's given us the freedom to do that. Now, in the 15th chapter of John, we find the same principle. in a different way, which is, I am the vine and you're the branches, and you need to abide in the vine. Abide in the Word, let the Word abide in you, and then you will bear fruit richly. It's the same principle. A principle is a principle is a principle. A principle doesn't lie. If it's not working, you're not doing it right. You need to go back. Walk backwards a little bit. Find out what you missed. I can't tell you the number of times I've done that. So if you abide in the Word and let this Word abide in you, you bring forth fruit richly, because it's your Father's good pleasure that you prosper and bring forth richly. If you do not let me abide in you, this contemplation and meditation, if you don't take these 12 periods a day, then you are cut off. You're like a branch of a tree that is cut off and it withereth, and you don't bear fruit. So, he says nothing about whether our contemplation of God should be the Father, divine mind, or Christ. That's something for each of us, in accord with our own natures, to find within ourselves. And when we do that, we will find that God is infinite, so infinite that today we will be worshiping God in one way, and tomorrow in another. Yes, don't get these fixed ideas in concrete in your mind. You've got to be, it has to be a fluid experience. It's different every day. But every day we're led into the silence in which we can make that contact. How can we expect a traveling salesman to worship in the same way that people are brought up as ministers of the church do? And I can understand that. I relate to that because, you see, I was a street person. I lived on the streets in Los Angeles. I was a street person. I was a hoodlum, really. As a teenager, I would break into cars and steal stereos and sell them to the man who was my manager of my paper route. He encouraged us to do that. I would break into houses and take things. I would buy and sell and use drugs. I ran around on the streets. I did everything short of murder that a street person does. So am I supposed to talk in a holy fashion the way the bishop or the pope of the Catholic Church does to God? No. I have these same kind of conversations. I was mad at God. Leave me alone. That's not a spiritual prayer. But God doesn't care. God being infinite. Look, the point is not how you talk to God. The point is that you're honest, 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 honest. If you're not honest, you can't make any progress because you'll be fooling yourself about where you are. And how are you honest? You take a look at the fruits. Take a look at your life. Just what is it that you're out picturing? Don't lie to yourself. And then if you need to go back and find out what you missed, do it. Talk to God any way you want to. Find your own concept. And then find your own experience. Find your own path. All this requires honesty. So it doesn't matter. There's no right words or thoughts to have about God. The point is that you're for real. And then that which is real will reveal itself to you. I noticed here he says, we are not the mind, we are the soul. And that's what we're doing on this path, is we're learning that the second chapter of Genesis is mind formations and was not made by God. And we're learning that the soul, the consciousness of us, made the first chapter of Genesis the real creation. Now in Herb's talks, my inner realizations and revelations are pointing us to this, which is what I just said. The mind's false appearances of a creation and the real soul or consciousness creations of Genesis 1, which can only be known when we go beyond the mind's interpretation of truth to the inner individual experience of truth itself. So he says, mind is not a creative agency. God is a creative agency, and only God is creative agency. The mind is given to us so that we may become aware of God, that we may meditate day and night and learn the laws of God and be receptive. Yes, this is what we are doing in this Kalua study series, is we're learning that we can step out of that mind and all of its beliefs and concepts. We can have that moment of silence, make the contact, and when God happens, it reveals its creation, its eternal creation, its temple not made with hands. That's what we're learning. So the deepest sense of humility comes to the individual who knows that his mind cannot create anything. Only the love of God can create, which is quite wonderful, because that means, as I wrote here, therefore, nothing exists which is not love. Now, you might put that in conjunction with what we realized at the beginning of this. You might take that in your meditation, which is, nothing has a beginning or an end. Nothing that exists. Nothing exists but love. Nothing has a beginning or an end. Nothing exists but love. Can't you just feel that? I told you before, sometimes I can feel a quickening. I just say those two little lines and I can feel it humming. It's just absolutely pregnant with something that you must experience. Nothing has a beginning or an ending. Nothing exists but love. You should not use your prayers to create good conditions and good things for yourself. Prayer should be an instrument through which you become aware of God's blessings already given to you by the grace of God. And that's exactly what we're talking about. That's a very important principle. So don't try to change anything out here, but rather try to be receptive so that God can reveal His creation to you. You can be a witness to God's power and behold the glory of God in action. And prayer then, as contemplation and meditation, leads to a state of awareness, a beholding. This is the infinite way. Be a beholder. And I can't stress this enough. That's the entire answer. All of this rigmarole we're going through over all these years is so that you can make the simple transformation of walking this earth as a mind showing you pictures, stepping out of that identity, and being a beholder as God happens, continuously happens, continuously appears, flows through, reveals the creation, falls back into itself, flows through. You're becoming a new creature. But anyway, he says, you can't heal people, but you can bear witness to God's law in action by meditation and contemplation of God's laws. So sit peacefully and quietly and let God's laws present themselves to your awareness. You let them present themselves to your awareness. You merely contemplate them as you would sit here. And he says, Joel just sits here in amazement day after day, watching God at work. So you must be a beholder. Now, let's take a moment and be still and see if there's anything else here before we quit. So chapter 19 is stressing a couple of principles. And one is that you have the freedom, in fact, the necessity. You must find your own path, that which leads you to that moment of silence in which God happens as your individual, real experience, real spiritual experience. What that path is for you, nobody can tell you. You have to experiment. You have to try them and see which one fits and feels right. You have to do the same thing with your concepts of God. If divine mind is working for you right now, use it. I mean, not use it, but go ahead and rest in that. If Father is working for you right now, trust it. If Christ is working, follow it. Don't worry about what Bill is doing or Joel or even Jesus Christ. Trust your own inner experience that's being revealed to you. And the other principle is that if you will make this contact 12 times a day, if you will concern yourself with that and forget about the problems, you will be led to that place where you are quiet, you are still, and you will receive instruction, impartation, and grace from within your own being. You will enter the silence and God will happen. And then all the things shall be added unto you. And you'll be able to look out and say, wow, it's working. I don't need anybody's approval. I know. My own experience is telling me this is working. The fruitage is there. But all of this requires diligence and self-honesty. It really does. When you find your path, whichever one it is, whether it's the infinite way or some other path, you will reach the place where you will be transformed from the person of earth who is caught up in mental images, the 10,000 things, the things that are being presented to someone. You will be transformed from that into a receptivity, an awareness, a beholder, as God happens in and as your being. And the entire creation, the perfect creation, will be revealed to you. Now that's the path we're walking, no matter what outer path we pick. So, next week we'll be halfway through. So far, I've really, really enjoyed this. I cannot thank you enough, all of you, for giving me the opportunity to enter the consciousness of each one of these chapters, or the consciousness that spoke each one of these chapters, for it is, in fact, my own consciousness, and I love it there. As I said, sometimes I sit in that consciousness and I can't help myself. The words just flow out of my lips. I love you. And the answer that comes back is, I love you, like an echo. And it's a beautiful thing. There's a oneness and a union. So I can't thank you enough. Thank you, thank you, thank you.